Welcome to Smarten Up, the show where we demystify the complex world of tax and provide practical business insights. I'm your host, Sally Preston. As a business owner, I know how frustrating it can be when it seems hard to access understandable information, particularly when the topic is as complex as the tax law. So in this podcast, we will explore topics to help you make smarter decisions when it comes to your business taxes, which will ultimately benefit your bottom line. Whether you are starting up in business or have been in business for years, this podcast aims to become an essential part of your financial toolkit. Welcome to Smarten Up, the Tax and Business Podcast. My name is Sally Preston, and I will be your host. Now, in other episodes, we've spoken about capital gains tax. We've also spoken about the small business capital gains tax concessions. Well, in this episode, we wanted to provide you with some more information on one of the key capital gains tax exemptions that you may apply in your lifetime, and that's the main residence exemption. So this is the exemption that may apply when you sell a house that you've lived in as your home. So today, the key points we will cover is, I'm going to tell you about the exemption and when it does apply. We're going to talk about what is a main residence and how can you tell. What can limit your ability to claim the exemption? What happens if you're no longer living there? And what happens in the case of death or divorce? So let's get stuck in. So what is the exemption? Well, the main residence exemption applies to disregard a capital gain or capital loss made on triggering a capital gains tax event on an individual's main residence. So if this exemption applies when you sell your home, then there is no capital gain or loss on the sale. However, it's not as simple as this. There are several requirements to be met, and you cannot just assume the sale of your home is CGT exempt. For example, there's a few circumstances where it's not. So for example, a foreign resident, it may be that you've used your home to generate assessable income. It may be that you've rented it out for a period of time. So a variety of factors can impact on your ability to claim the exemption. But let's talk about what a main residence actually is. So the definition of a main residence is, there must be an individual that owns what they call a dwelling. And that dwelling has to be that individual's main residence throughout the period of ownership and was not received as a beneficiary of a deceased estate. But what's a dwelling? Well, a dwelling includes a unit of accommodation contained in a building mainly used for residential accommodation. So like a house would qualify. Or it's something like a caravan, houseboat, or other mobile home. And it also includes the land under it. So the house and land under it. However, it does not necessarily include land that is adjacent to the building. But what's a residence? So we've got to keep breaking down these definitions. There's a lot in this area of the law. So whether your property is your main residence actually depends on considering several factors. These include the length of time you've lived in the dwelling, where your family reside, whether you have moved your personal belongings into the dwelling, your mailing address, your electoral roll address, whether you're responsible for the connection and payment of services such as a telephone, electricity and gas, and your intention in occupying the dwelling. So before it can be considered your main residence, that dwelling, we'll call it a house. So that house isn't your main residence. We actually have to look at a bunch of different factors to see whether it actually is what we call your main residence. So once we get through that, we've decided that you have a dwelling and that it's your main residence. But what are the limitations on claiming CGT exemption when you sell it? Well, there are several. So it might stop you from claiming the full CGT exemption, and you need to be aware of these. So let's talk about adjacent land. So the land that's adjacent to your dwelling that is used for private or domestic purposes, so for example, the garden, the lawns in your front and backyard, up to 2 hectares only can be included in the exemption. However, it's important to consider how the land is being used. So for example, if you're a farmer, a primary producer, this may have a big impact where the land is used for a dual purpose. So say you own a parcel of land that's significantly bigger than 2 hectares. Now, you might have your family home on that parcel of land, but it's only the land that's being used mainly for private and domestic purposes. And even if that's less than 2 hectares, that's the part that is included in this main residence CGT exemption. So only the amount that's used for private use. If it's used instead for your farming activities, then that's not going to be part of your main residence exemption. Now, it's also important to note, so in that same example, so say it is a big property. Now, the 2 hectares that you say is for your private use and that you include in your main residence exemption, they actually don't have to be joined. They can actually be 2 separate parcels of land. So say you have your swimming pool that's sitting further away from the house. Maybe you've got a tennis court. Maybe it's a garage that you use for your private car. They don't have to actually be joined to the parcel that you where your house is. So long as it's close proximity to it, then the 2 hectares can be measured based on that. So it's important when you're trying to determine on a bigger block of land, which block or which area of the land is being used for private use and maybe included in that main residence exemption. Now, another thing to be aware of is multiple dwellings. So the exemption can only apply to one dwelling. Now, we've talked about what a dwelling is, but the law does extend the meaning of dwelling to include adjacent structures. So what that means is this may include a granny flat or something similar, a garage, a storeroom, or another structure that's associated with the home to the extent that it was primarily for private or domestic purposes. So basically, where the structures seemingly used as the one residence. So there's several factors to consider whether the structure is part of that main residence. Whether the occupants eat, sleep, or live in that structure. The distance and the proximity of the units of accommodation. So if it's a long way from the home, maybe it's less arguable that it's part of the main residence. Whether the units are connected, whether the units are capable of being sold separately, the extent to which daily activities of the occupants and the units are integrated, how the units are shared by the occupants, and how the costs of the units are shared by the occupants. So an example where two structures may be considered to be one place of residence is a caravan or a granny flat behind the house that your family member lives in. And maybe they come into the house for meals, do their washing, and they're treated as part of the household. So that might be an example of where that granny flat or that separate structure is still considered part of your main residence, even though it's not necessarily permanently attached to the main residence. Now, multiple dwellings can also arise and also affect your ability to claim the main residence exemption, where, for example, your spouse and you actually live in different properties. So say, for example, you have a beach house and you have a townhouse, and maybe you occupy the beach house and your spouse spends most of their time at the townhouse. Then what happens in that situation? Well, it's not that you can both claim your both properties to be main residence, all right? So if you and your spouse, unless you're permanently separated, which means you're really not together anymore, you must then either choose one of the dwellings to be the main residence for both of you or nominate the different dwellings as your main residence for the period. Now, if you do that, then the property is only going to be partially exempt. So for example, say in that example of a beach house and a townhouse, then if you held the properties for the same length of time and you said, look, both are our main residence, I spend more time here and my spouse spends more time there, we're both going to nominate, then potentially only 50% of each property is going to get the main residence exemption. Now, I think this is a numbers game. So potentially if that situation applies to you, then I would be looking at the size of the gain, because you do still have the option to nominate only one property and get 100% of the exemption. So I'd be sitting down and looking at what the capital gain was going to be on each property and then thinking very carefully before I made the decision to split and treat both. Now, if the gain's the same on both, then it's not going to have any impact. Essentially, 50% of each property will be taxable, 50% exempt. But if one property had a significantly larger gain, I'd probably be nominating that one. So a bit of a pragmatic approach to looking at those circumstances. Now, it changes though. So say you had the same two properties. If you had a financially dependent child or a dependent child and they lived in the second property, you don't get the same liberties. You'd be nominating one residence as both your main residence, okay, for both of you to occupy. Bit different for a child than a spouse. All right. Now, another thing that can limit your ability to claim the full exemption, and this is one that a lot of people aren't aware of, is if you use the dwelling both as your home and to derive assessable income. The test to consider is, if you had incurred interest on the money borrowed to acquire the dwelling, could you have deducted some or all of that interest on that loan? Then this may apply to your main residence. So for example, I'll give you an example of a doctor's surgery set up at home. So say you have a rather large house, maybe you've even custom built it so that you've got a room or multiple rooms attached to the house that you use as your consultation rooms. Now, ordinarily, what would happen is that area of home might be treated as a place of business. And for tax purposes, you'd be eligible to get a deduction for some of those costs that relate to having that property. Well, it does affect your main residence exemption. And so it's actually really important to be aware of it. So if you use your property as your main residence and also in that case to operate a business, even if you lease a room or use the property as an Airbnb occasionally, you should keep this in mind. Because what's going to happen is a generally accepted basis of determining how much of your property is exempt is actually looking at the floor space. So if you said that, say, one quarter of the house in that doctor's exemption, in that doctor's case, one quarter was the consultation rooms used for that consulting business, then one quarter of the house or one quarter of the capital gain will be taxed because that's used for producing assessable income. So you're only going to get main residence to the extent that floor space, or there might be some other measure that you're eligible to use to measure how much the property is actually main residence versus business use. Now, as I said, this is not just if it's obvious and you've got a sign out the front and you're running a doctor's surgery, or maybe you're even running an accounting firm from home and you've got a dedicated separate door, people go in and they have a meeting with you. Maybe it's not as obvious as that. Maybe it is if you lease the room to someone and you report the assessable income, which you should do because you are generating assessable income from your home. And maybe you get to take deductions for that room then. Maybe you're taking deductions for the furnishings you put in there. Or maybe you're even using the home to generate income on Airbnb occasionally. All of those factors can come into play when you determine how much of that capital gain or loss in the property is under the main residence exemption and which will be taxable as a normal capital gain. So that's a really important one to consider. Another factor is absences. So what happens if you no longer live at your main residence? So a period of absence can impact on your ability to claim the exemption. So one of these examples might be if you do not move into the dwelling at the first practical opportunity after acquiring the dwelling, then it won't be treated as your dwelling from the time it was acquired. So if you delay moving in, maybe you rent it first. But if you move in as soon as practical, so maybe you move in within, let's say, the first 3 months, then the dwelling can be treated as your main residence from the time you actually acquire it, even though you weren't quite there. If the dwelling's rented out between when it's acquired and you moved in, it's only eligible for a partial exemption. So you start prorating your eligibility to the main residence exemption. So that's really an important factor when you buy a new home and you consider when you move in. Now, the exemption may be claimed for up to 4 years from the time it was acquired if you build a dwelling on land or repair, renovate, or finish a building that's a dwelling on the land. The dwelling must become your main residence, though, still as soon as practicable after the work is finished. So say you get a dwelling that you are then going to significantly renovate. You're not going to move in for 12 months while that happens. You may still be able to claim the exemption from when you acquired it, depending on your circumstances. But you do have to move into it as soon as you can, once it's ready, okay? So not moving in straight away is a factor to take into account. The key one that a lot of people are kind of aware of in the back of their mind, they've probably done some Googling, is when you move out of the dwelling and then rent it. Now, two such situations. One, you can move out of the dwelling or out of the house and you may still nominate it as your main residence and you've got 6 months to sell that residence and move into a new residence and count both of them. So you can get an overlap period between changing houses. So say you move out because you're selling it, you're buying a new property, and then you have 6 months overlap between the two properties for which they can both. Now that rule only applies if the original dwelling was used as your main residence for a continuous period for at least 3 months in the prior 12 months, and it was not used for income producing purposes in any of the 12 month period. That's that 3 month overlap. So again, it's not guaranteed you're going to get that. But what if you move out and it's not to sell? What if you moved out to rent it? So even if you move out of a property, provided it's not used to generate income, it can still be eligible to be your main residence indefinitely. So you've got to remember though that you can only have one main residence at a time. So you can't get around it by saying, it was my main residence, I'm not going to rent it out, but I'm buying a second one and I'm going to claim on that one too. That doesn't work. All right, so this is where maybe you're going in, maybe you've relocated for work and you're going to rent in the new place, in the new location, and you're going to keep the other house and keep that empty. So when you do come back, it's ready to go. Or maybe there's kids that have stayed in there and you've gone and rented somewhere else. That can still be your main residence, as long as you're not using it to derive that accessible income. So you're not actually renting it out. So if you do use it to produce accessible income, so say you do rent it out, then you can keep that property as your main residence and be away from it for up to 6 years. So how does that work? So if you've lived in a property for, say, a year, then you just move out of the property. Maybe you've got a posting in a job or you're relocating or you're going overseas traveling for a year and you rent it out for that year. Then you move back into it, and so long as you don't take another main residence or try and claim main residence on a different property at the time, then you can still continue to treat the original property as your main residence for the entire period. Now, when you move back in, say you might only stay for another year, every time you move back in for a period of time and move back out again, guess what? The 6 year clock starts again. So say you're in there for a year, move out for a year, back in for a year, you can go again for up to 6 years. And that whole period can be your main residence exemption. And that's when you're renting it out, when you're not there. So that's important to know as well. So let's give it an example of that. So say you own the property for 3 years. What happens if you move out and then you're gone for 7 years before you sell it? And that exceeds the 6 year period of absence that's allowed to still claim that original property is your main residence. Well, it's based on a proportion of the days. So what we do is we say, well, I lived in it for 3 years. I then had 6 years absence. That adds up to 9 years. Now we take this down to the day. But I've had 12 months or a year when I was no longer eligible for the main residence exemption. So if we calculate the capital gain based on as if the property wasn't exempt, we only get 1/10, being that 1 year out of the 10 years of ownership that we pay tax on. The other 9 years, being the 3 years you lived in it and the 6 years of absence, is eligible for the main residence exemption. Now, it gets more complicated and the calculation gets a lot trickier if, for example, you'd use the property when you did live in it to derive accessible income. Now, I'm not even going to go through that, but it's not as clean cut as you might think, but there is a formula. So there's a method to the madness, and there's a method that you could apply if you wanted to try and calculate that yourself. Okay, so we've talked about moving out when you don't move in straight away, and if you just go for a while away from the property. But what happens when you do have two properties? So let's say you move out of your main residence and you buy another house that you actually intend to live in. Is it possible to still continue to claim the main residence on the property you've moved out of? Well, yes, it is. But you cannot then claim on the house you are living in. So in many cases, making a decision over which house you claim the main residence exemption on probably is just a numbers decision. So which one generated the most capital gain? Say you calculated the house you've moved out of and you took it up to the 6 years of absence and you calculated how much gain you're saving on for that period versus how much you would have to pay if you treated the house you're currently in as your main residence. So it really would be a decision, probably a financial decision, about which one achieves the best outcome. Now, that's not circumventing anything. That's actually just the method that you can apply. Noting that you can have a 6 year period of absence from a home. It has to have qualified first as a main residence. And then you can elect the house you'll currently live in to then become your main residence. But the 6 years that the other one was, you'd be up for capital gains tax when you sell that second property. So I know that's getting a little confusing. So we'll cut that one there. But just remember, two properties is possible, but not at the same time. And so you might just be running the numbers to see the best outcome for you. All right. Now, it'd be sad if this happens to you, but what happens if your main residence is accidentally destroyed? Well, if it is and you choose not to build another dwelling on the land, then it is important to be aware that if you instead sell vacant land, or maybe you even subdivide and sell the land in lots, you must account for any capital gain or loss you make on the sale. Because there's no dwelling on that land anymore. So you're not entitled to claim a partial exemption for the period it was a dwelling. It's not a main residence. So the land that you've sold is no longer eligible for a main residence exemption. Now, that might be a shock, but it is something that you do need to be aware of. If instead you decide to rebuild after demolishing the dwelling, then the exemption can be claimed if you elect to treat the vacant land as your main residence when it was just vacant land before the new house got built, and there's no more than 4 years between the time of the last occupation and making the dwelling your main residence again. So you have got time to rebuild and continue that as your main residence. Now, if you happen to have turned around and bought a second property, you're in again making that calculation judgment about which one should be your main residence. But by and large, if something happens to your home, maybe you just give up and want to sell the land, be mindful the main residence exemption relies on there being a dwelling on the property. So that's a really key factor. Now, the final thing I wanted to talk about is what happens in the event of death or divorce. So where the owner of a dwelling dies and the property qualifies for that person as their main residence, the beneficiary or the recipient of the property or trustee of the deceased estate may still apply the exemption to any capital gain or loss on disposal. Now, this area is really quite complex, but a high level, it may be still exempt where the property is sold within 2 years of the deceased's death or a longer period as allowed by the Commissioner of Taxation, or where the dwelling was from the death, the main residence of one or more of the spouse of the deceased, an individual who has the right to occupy the dwelling under the deceased's will, or the person who received the property under the will. So you might be able to continue a deceased person's main residence exemption up to a point if certain rules apply to you. But in general, if you don't live in the family home and say your final parent dies and you inherit the home, if you're not planning to move in there, you've got up to 2 years to still claim that main residence exemption and sell the property and claim it under that exemption. If you don't sell it within that time, I recommend, hopefully it's for circumstances beyond your control, and you can apply to the ATO to extend the period. But if you keep it longer, then you are going to be subject to CGT, and those rules get really tricky, so we're not going to cover them. So I recommend that if you inherit a property, you do seek external help straight away as to how and what you can do with that property. Now, in the event of a relationship breakdown or a divorce, if you receive property or a part interest in property, and this property was your spouse's, and say you and your spouse live there as your main residence, or maybe it now becomes your main residence, then you may still be eligible to claim a partial or full exemption to the main residence exemption when you do sell a property. And again, super complicated, but just be mindful that even if you did live there, maybe the property was not in your name, you may be still eligible to claim some main residence exemption. So again, please don't undertake those transactions without advice. So the main residence exemption is probably the most obvious one that people think of, or maybe they don't think of it when they sell their home. But please don't make the assumption that your home is completely exempt when you make a sale of a property. It might not be. It might be a portion of it might be exempt. But please seek advice. That's what we've got time for today. My name is Sally Preston, and this was an episode of Smarten Up, the Tax and Business Podcast. I'll speak to you on the next episode. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Smarten Up Tax and Business. I hope you found the information valuable as you navigate your entrepreneurial journey. If you did, please leave us a review and share the podcast with your fellow business owners. Remember, what we've talked about today is not a substitute for getting formal advice from an accountant or lawyer that is more specific to your circumstances. But knowledge is power when it comes to getting your taxes right, and it can also save you a buttload of money too.